The following is a seminar entitled Pure Devotional Service, Part 2, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on January 3rd, 2010, in Wellington, New Zealand.
So, today we are blessed with the most auspicious opportunity. I was requested by your temple president to give some special seminar when I was here, so we've chosen to speak on the most wonderful of all topics, pure devotional service. This is part two. I will give a brief recap of part one. For those of you who weren't here last night, I will give you a brief recap to kind of bring you up to speed with where we are right now in this discussion. But before we begin, feeling myself very meek and insignificant, I would like to beg the blessings of the previous acharyas that I may speak some appropriate words on this auspicious occasion. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. So, it has been very nicely analyzed in the fact this book by Prabhupada, which is a summary study of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Vasamrita Sindhu, that there are six characteristics of pure devotional service. The first characteristic is that pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. This is very wonderful because who amongst us is not distressed these days? So this is a great relief. The second is that pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness, which means it bestows good fortune on the entire universe. And the third point of yesterday's discussion, the third characteristic, pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. In other words, you don't have to try to be happy. It happens automatically as soon as you think about Krishna. And pleasing Krishna, then your happiness comes automatically. In other words, happiness is the shadow of Krishna consciousness. Wherever there is Krishna consciousness, its shadow automatically goes. So if you're feeling unhappy, all you have to do is remember Krishna. And then immediately you become filled with bliss. This is the third characteristic. And so now we will go into depth. Last night's lecture is available on, it's been being recorded, so you want to get last night's lecture, you can just bring a blank CD or a flash drive or an external hard drive to me after this lecture upstairs, and we can make a copy of last night's lecture for you also, so you can get the whole seminar. It will be eventually posted on the internet too. So the fourth characteristic, pure devotional service is rarely achieved. Now you may think, well, what's my hope then? If it's rarely achieved, is it something like, you know, buying a lottery ticket and it's very rare to win the lottery? Is it even worth trying if it's so rarely achieved? Well, the good news is that even though it is rarely achieved, as confirmed by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he says that out of thousands among them, one may endeavor for perfection, and of a thousand who have endeavored for perfection, hardly even one will know me in truth. So it is a very rare thing, actually, to come to the point of Krishna consciousness. But the beauty of it is, if you desire it sincerely, you can be one of those rare people, you see. It's not a matter of luck. Well, I bought a lottery ticket, and they didn't pull my name out of the hat, you see. It's not like that. Simply, you have to sincerely desire pure Krishna consciousness. And if you are sincere in that desire, then Krishna will bless you with it. Prabhupada is explaining here about the rareness of pure devotional service. Actually, Lord Shiva is one of the authorities. There are 12 great Mahajanas on devotional service, great authorities about devotional service, and one of them is Lord Shiva. And he is commenting here, the rarity of pure devotional service is also confirmed in the Tantra Shastra, where Lord Shiva says to Sati, my dear Sati, if one is a very fine philosopher analyzing the different processes of knowledge, he can achieve liberation from the material entanglement. By performance of the ritualistic sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas, one can be elevated to the platform of pious activities and thereby enjoy the material comforts of life to the fullest extent. But all such endeavors can hardly offer anyone devotional service to the Lord, not even if one tries for it by such processes for many, many thousands of births. So just see, Lord Shiva is confirming. It's a very, very rare thing to achieve pure devotional service. Prabhupada continues in his writings here, in Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj that merely by personal efforts or by the instructions of higher authorities, one cannot attain to the stage of devotional service. One must become blessed by the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee who is completely freed from the contamination of material desires. So that's the secret. It's not just your endeavor. You have to get that blessing from the dust of the lotus feet of pure devotee. You may say, well, I missed getting that dust, so what is my hope? The good news is this. The pure devotee's mercy, the dust of the pure devotee, dust means the mercy also. The mercy or the dust of the pure devotees is also available in their instructions. Srila Prabhupada explains there are two types of ways of associating with Guru. One is, it is called the Vapu Seva, his physical presence. Sometimes the spiritual master is present, sometimes he is not present. You see? So whenever you have the opportunity to directly serve the spiritual master in his personal presence, that's very auspicious and one should take advantage of that. But what to do when the spiritual master is not present? You see? That is when you connect through the process known as Vani Seva. Vani Seva means the spiritual master is not his body. He actually is his instructions. They are non-different from him. So if you will take into your heart the instructions you have received from the spiritual master and you will sincerely execute those instructions, then you are connecting with him in an even more powerful way. You're getting even more of that dust. In fact, you can eat that dust at every minute simply by connecting yourself with the instructions that you've received from the spiritual master. And in this way, there's hope for us. I remember when I was when I joined our movement, I joined in a remote little center, Austin, Texas, and Prabhupada never came there. Actually, one time he wanted to come. He personally wrote me offering to come, but I wasn't the president. And our president was too nervous. He was thinking, oh my God, if we invite Prabhupada, we may make some offense, so better not to invite him. That was a big mistake. Prabhupada wrote me a letter. He said, if you all can do this, this, and this, then I will come to visit your center. He personally wrote me. But the Tamil president was too scared. So we missed that opportunity to have Prabhupada come to Austin. He came to Dallas. It's only 200 miles away. Came to Dallas many times. But he never came to Austin, and my Tamil president made a big mistake and didn't invite Prabhupada. But anyway, we saw Prabhupada in other places. So, and the real point I'm making is that even though we hardly saw Prabhupada, and Prabhupada describes that he only saw his Guru Maharaj a handful of times, maybe two handfuls of times at the most. So the physical proximity to the spiritual master is not really the key to how you advance in Krishna consciousness. The key is that you take the instructions you've received from the spiritual master as your life and soul, and then you become solidly connected with Guru and Krishna. So even though we may not be close enough to get the dust from the feet of the spiritual master, if we will take the instructions that he is giving and we will follow them very sincerely, then, by that means, Vani Seva, we will get that mercy, we'll get that dust, and we'll become qualified to enter into that sublime realm known as the wonderful world of pure devotional service. Now, Prabhupada writes another paragraph in this section. He says, in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, sixth chapter, verse 18, Narada also says to Yudhisthira, my dear king, it is Lord Krishna, known as Mukunda, who is the eternal protector of the Pandavas and the Yadus. He is also your spiritual master and instructor in every respect. He is the only worshipable God for you. He is very dear and affectionate, and he is the director of all your activities, both individual and familial. And what's more, he sometimes carries out your orders as if he were your messenger. My dear king, how very fortunate you are, because for others, all these favors given to you by the Supreme Lord would not even be dreamt of. The purport to this verse is that the Lord easily offers liberation, but he rarely agrees to offer a soul devotional service, because by devotional service, the Lord himself becomes purchased by the devotee. That's a wonderful point that Prabhupada's making here. And this is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text number 22. Ananyaschintayantomang yejana paryapasate tesham nitchapayuktanam yogachemam vahamyaham. Krishna says that those who worship me with pure, exclusive devotion, I personally give them whatever they are, I protect whatever they have, and I personally provide for them whatever they are lacking. Prabhupada elaborated on this verse in one lecture. He said, Krishna delivers to your front door all of your necessities. That means spiritual and material. Krishna gives everything. So just imagine when that person who owns and controls everything in the entire existence becomes your personal supplier of all necessities, could you ever be lacking in anything? No. You see. So this is why pure devotional service is rarely achieved, because when you become a pure devotee, Krishna becomes your personal property. He becomes your personal servant, giving you whatever you need in all times, all places, and all circumstances. So that's, Krishna, he's not going to do that for somebody who's a karma mishra bhakta, who vacillates between sense enjoyment and bhakti. Krishna's not going to do that for such a person. He says in that verse, exclusive devotion. That mood of exclusive devotion has been shown by the greatest example of a devotee, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says, I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and he shall remain so even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or leaves me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He is my worshipful Lord unconditionally. So this is the mood of exclusive devotion. Krishna can do whatever he wants with me. He can punish me, he can reward me, he can kill me, whatever he wants. I'm simply his property. He can do whatever he wants to me from now on for all of eternity. You see, that mood that I'm completely sold out to Krishna. I'm his property. From now on, I just belong to Krishna, and that's it. I have no independence. My independence is now offered in his service. Whatever he wants to do with me, as Christ says in the Bible, Father, not my will, but thy will be done. He was willing to be crucified, nailed on a cross if he could please Krishna, you see. He was willing to even be nailed on a cross if he could please Krishna by doing that. So, this mood of being willing to do anything and everything to please our beloved Lord Krishna, this mood means that now Krishna becomes your personal property, supplying all of your necessities. So this is why it's very rare. You really have to pass a lot of tests to get to this point where Krishna is going to personally serve you in every way, at every minute, taking care of all your necessities, in personally, not through his material energy, not through his spiritual energy, but directly, personally, taking care of all your necessities. The next characteristic of pure devotional service is, it's described here, the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. And in the sentence form, it says, those in pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation. Well, this may be confusing for some folks, because aren't we trying to get liberated? Here we are in the karma chakra, birth, death, old age, and disease, wanting to get out. I mean, you know, stop the world, I want to get off, you know, kind of, let me get out of this place, this is too much. I want to go to a place where it's full of bliss, the spiritual world. I want to go back to Godhead, you see. Actually, there's nothing wrong with that desire. It's good to desire to go back to Godhead. That will help you to advance in Krishna consciousness. So what does it mean, those who deride even the conception of liberation? This specifically refers to impersonal liberation, merging and becoming one with Brahman. You see? This idea, devotee rejects. You see? He doesn't want to become one with God, you see. He wants to remain separate from God so he can serve him. If you were to tell Hanuman, my dear Hanuman, just think, if you can merge and become Ram, then you can enjoy Sita. What would he do? He would take his tail and he would beat the crud out of you. If you made such a statement that you can merge and become Ram, and then you can enjoy Sita. He would be so angry. You'd be lucky if you'd survive if you made such a statement to Hanuman. He'd wrap that tail around you and squeeze the life out of you, probably. I mean, that would be very offensive. You could never tell Hanuman that you can merge. My dear Hanuman, you can merge and become Ram. No way, you see. He wants to remain as Hanuman so he can serve Ram eternally. Ram is father, Sita is mother. For him, he wants to serve his mother and father for all of eternity. If you tell him you can become Ram, he will be very angry, you see. He will not accept such a philosophy, because he's a pure devotee. He is, those engaged in pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation. It is poison for them. They can't even consider that idea that I can become God, you see. So Prabhupada now explains further, quoting from Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami says that if Brahmananda, or the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, is multiplied by 1 trillion-fold, it cannot compare to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. So, as one time, it sometimes stated, why become God when you can become greater than God? In other words, the devotee of the Lord enjoys a happiness which is greater than the Lord's happiness. You may say, what? What are you talking about? But no, this is a fact. It's proven by this pastime of Krishna that he was seeing his own position as the supreme enjoyer, and he was seeing Srimati Radharani. He was observing, actually, I am seeing that my dear Radhika is tasting more nectar in serving me than I am tasting by being served by her. Now, Krishna is not somebody to be outdone by anybody, I can tell you right now. He's very competitive. So when he sees that Radharani is enjoying more than him, he's not going to be defeated by any woman, you see. So, that beautiful golden limb girl, you see, she is called Gaurangi because she has beautiful golden limbs. Gaurangi. So, Lord Krishna, he decides that he will become also like that. So he becomes Gauranga. He becomes Lord Chaitanya. So he can taste that nectar which is being tasted by Srimati Radharani, you see. Because actually the devotee enjoys on a higher level than God. Therefore God, not to be outdone by any of his devotees, becomes Lord Chaitanya. So he can taste a pleasure even greater than being Krishna, you see. So, why desire to become God when you can go to a higher level by becoming the devotee of God? You see, that is Krishna consciousness. So, the next characteristic, and this is the final of the six. It is titled here, Attracting Krishna, but in the longer form, it is stated that pure devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna. That means you can't attract him with money. Whatever we have, it's like, just like a little child, he may see a penny on the ground and he runs for it, you see. But when an adult sees a penny lying on the ground, he may think, what's the use? It's not even worth bending over to pick it up, you know. Just let it sit there. So whatever we may offer Krishna in terms of money, it's just like a penny, you know. Even if it's millions and billions of dollars, it's insignificant. There's no attraction. You can't attract Krishna with money. What about your cooking? Well, I'm going to make a really nice prasadam for Krishna. But wait a minute, Radharani is also cooking for Krishna. But there's one thing that does attract Krishna, and that is pure devotional service. By that, Krishna becomes so attracted, as we stated a few minutes ago, he will become your personal property. Krishna is very fond of being named after his devotees. Yashoda Nandana, you see. Nanda Nandana. When he hears these names, his heart just sings in ecstasy, you see. When he likes to be named by his devotees, you see. He likes to be named in relationship with his devotees. That's the sweetest nectar for him, you see. Govinda, the one who gives pleasure to the cows. He loves those kind of names, you see. Because this is Krishna's great happiness, is to please his devotees, you see. This is his great happiness. So, Prabhupada explains this in great length, actually. So we'll read something from Prabhupada's wonderful words here. We encourage everyone to get a copy of this book, Nectar of Devotion. Study it regularly. If you do so and try to follow what's in it, we guarantee that you'll become a pure devotee in due course of time. This is the guidebook on how to become a pure devotee. Everyone should become familiar with this book. Okay. Attracting Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami has stated that devotional service attracts even Krishna. Krishna attracts everyone, but devotional service attracts Krishna. The symbol of devotional service in the highest degree is Radharani. Krishna is called Madan Mohan, which means that he is so attractive that he can defeat the attraction of thousands of cupids. But Radharani is still more attractive, for she can even attract Krishna. Therefore, devotees call her Madan Mohan Mohini, the attractor of the attractor of Cupid. To perform devotional service means to follow in the footsteps of Radha Rani and the devotees in Vrindavan, put themselves under the care of Radharani in order to achieve perfection in their devotional service. Even today in Vrindavan, India, everywhere you hear Radhe, Radhe, Jai Radhe, Even the rickshaw wala, you see, instead of in other places, they'll honk a horn or something. But in Vrindavan, if somebody's trying to warn someone they're coming, they go, Radhe, Radhe. You see, the rickshaw walas. You see, even just the ordinary rickshaw wala is going, Radhe, Radhe. You see, everywhere you see Radharani's name is there. Because in Vrindavan, in the original Vrindavan and also the earthly Vrindavan, everyone is putting themselves under the direction, under the control of Radharani, because she is the one who can attract even Krishna. Actually, Prabhupada taught us like that. It was a wonderful lecture he gave in London on the occasion of Radhastami. He taught us how to pray to Radharani. He said, pray in this way, my dear mother, Radharani. Now, there's some ladies now in our movement who objected to being called mother. Like that's some kind of a low-class title. But actually, this is a very wonderful title. Prabhupada said, my dear mother, Radharani. That's how he taught us to pray, to address her as our mother. So it's a very big position. Radharani is in that position. My dear mother, Radharani, please tell about me to your Krishna. So what is the meaning? Prabhupada explained. You see, nobody can attract Krishna like Radharani. So, but Krishna is a very big man, not so easy to approach. But Radharani, you see, the woman's nature is more soft-hearted nature. So, we can easily approach Radharani. If we say, my dear mother, please tell about me to your Krishna, then she'll recommend. Just like one of my godbrothers, he's applying for some leadership position. He asked me to write him a letter of recommendation. So I really very nicely glorified the wonderful qualities of my godbrothers and hope he'll get his position. He wanted to become a temple president in one of our major centers in Europe. So if you can find the right person who can recommend you in a very nice way, you see, that can get you in with the big authority. So, if Papa explains that if you pray like that to Mother Radharani, then she will tell these words to Krishna. She'll say, my dear Krishna, just see this devotee here, he is a better devotee than me. So you can just imagine what Krishna will think. You see, oh, my dear Radharani is telling me that there is a very special devotee who is better devotee than her. Let me see, who is this devotee that is better than Radharani? Oh, I want to see. So Krishna immediately, you see, his attention is diverted to that devotee. So in this way, you see, if we can get that mercy of Radharani, beg her to please recommend us to Krishna, you see, then Krishna will give us pure devotional service because Radharani is recommended. So this is a very important point. You may say, well, how am I supposed to pray to Radharani? Well, it's already built into the Maha Mantra. Hare is addressing Radharani. So first we call out to Radharani, Hare, you see. It is actually Radhe. And we say, Hare, it is Radhe, you see. Hare Krishna. We're calling to Radharani, Mother Hara, you see. Mother Radha. In the vocative form, just like we say, Radha, but if we're calling out to her, we say Radhe. It is called the vocative form of the noun. So similarly, Mother Hara, in the vocative form, addressing form, becomes Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And someone says, well, how you can go Hare Rama, you know, because that's Lord Ram. If Hare is Radha, then how you can say Ram, you know. But actually, Rama is also Krishna. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. And also, Hare can be understood to be Sita as well. And so either way, you're okay. Hare Ram is okay either way. Whichever rasa you have or the way you want to see it, it comes out. It's either Sita Ram or it's Radha and Krishna. You see, because Krishna is also Rama, the supreme enjoyer. So now we'll continue here. In Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that the Mahatmas are great souls who are under the protection of the Daivi Prakriti, the internal potency, Radharani. So being directly under the control of the internal potency of Krishna, devotional service attracts even Krishna himself. This fact is corroborated by Krishna in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 14th chapter, verse 20, where he says, "My dear Uddhava, you may know it from me that the attraction I feel for the devotional service rendered by my devotees is not to be attained even by the performance of mystic yoga, philosophical speculation, ritualistic sacrifices, the study of Vedanta, the practice of severe austerities, or the giving of everything in charity. These are, of course, very nice activities, but they are not as attractive to me as the transcendental loving service rendered by my devotees." So we should simply focus on developing this mood of loving service to Krishna. Devotional service means loving service. Service means it's not an exchange for money. Service means simply I give this to you. That's the meaning of service. I lovingly offer this to you. And my return is the joy that I receive by loving you. That is the payment that I want. I simply want to have the happiness of being able to love you with all of my heart. You see, that is Krishna consciousness. So, I can ask now if there's any questions regarding, especially on this point, regarding the science of pure devotional service. And is there any question? Yes.
Maharaj, where does the sincere desire come from to serve Lord Krishna?
The sincere desire to serve Krishna is there within you. Just like, how is it that the fish has a desire to be in the water? It's his very nature, isn't it? So, by our very nature, we actually desire to be absorbed in devotional service. It is only due to being grossly disoriented by contact with the material modes of nature that we take that natural desire to sincerely love Krishna and transfer it over to the material energy. Everybody wants to love somebody. Let's see. Even in the material world, there's so many pop songs like that, that nobody wants to live in a world without love. You see? Or there was another song, "You've got to find somebody to love." You see? So, yes, that's a, so, everyone has that propensity to want to have loving relationship. If they want family members, they want friends. If they don't have that, what do? Dog. Yes, they get dog. They come home from work and the dog is there wagging his tail. They pat the dog on the head and the dog licks their face, you see. And they feel very happy. Oh, the dog loves me, you see. I love the dog and the dog loves me. So in this way, everyone has that propensity to want to exchange love. Everyone. And that original nature comes from that tendency we have to love the supreme, all-attractive personality who is the source of all dazzling beauty throughout all of existence. That is our original natural loving propensity, but that becomes in contact with the material mode of passion. You see, kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhavaha mahashana mahapava vidyanam mihravairyanam. That original pure love of Krishna, when it comes in contact with the material mode of passion, is transformed into lust, and it is later degraded into wrath, and it is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So, we simply have to reverse the process. That pure love, just like the yogurt, the milk is transformed into yogurt when it comes into contact with the yogging agent. So that original pure love, you see, it became transformed in lust because we came in contact with the material mode of passion by our foolish desire to try to become independent of the Lord. So now we just have to reverse the process. Okay, just put it in reverse and go back. take that tendency you want, that lusty tendency that we have to enjoy, and understand that we can get the real enjoyment by serving Krishna. That will motivate us in the beginning, that I want to truly enjoy, I want to truly be happy, so let me serve Krishna so I can get that enjoyment. But then by serving Krishna, you gradually become purified to where you're not even thinking about your enjoyment anymore. You're just thinking of how to give pleasure to Krishna, you see. That is the mood of Radharani and the gopis. They don't think about their own enjoyment, nothing. They think nothing about their own enjoyment. They just want that Krishna will be happy. Everyone knows that story, I think. That Krishna, he had the headache. Oh, my head, very bad headache. He told his messenger, will you kindly bring the dust from the feet of my devotees? Only that will cure my headache. So the messenger went out searching. First he came to some smarta Brahmins who were very expert in following the Vedic rituals. You see, expert puja, expert this, all the rules and regulations, pakka Brahmins, you see. Can you give the... Krishna has a headache, my dear Brahmanas. Krishna has a headache. He is requesting the foot dust from his devotees to cure his headache kindly. Can you give the dust? Are you kidding? We will go to hell. If the dust from our feet touches the head of Bhagavan, we will burn in hell forever. No way, forget it. Well, the messenger thought, well, what to do? So he wandered on down the way. He finally came to Vrindavan Forest, you see. And there he saw the gopi girls, you see. So he said, oh, my dear gopi girls, your beloved Krishna, he has headache. Oh, Krishna has headache. Oh, the devotees, the gopis went into great stress. Oh, Krishna has a headache. Oh, they were so disturbed to hear that he had headache. And he said that he is requesting the foot dust from his devotees to cure the headache. Immediately he said, yes, 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 take dust. He said, but aren't you afraid you'll go to hell? He said, that's all right. We don't mind going to hell. We just want that Krishna's headache shall be cured. So this, when you, in the beginning, we come to Krishna consciousness so we can be happy, so we can enjoy, you see. That's good in the beginning. That's very good. But gradually, as you become purified, you forget about your own happiness. You just want to see that Krishna is happy. And that's when Krishna becomes your personal property and you enjoy on a higher level even than Krishna, you see. So the secret of how to be happy is to just try to make Krishna happy. People say, you know, they write me letters, they say, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, but I'm not enjoying it anymore. What's wrong? What am I doing wrong? I'm trying to get the nectar, but I don't taste the nectar when I chant Hare Krishna. What to do? What's wrong? And I tell them this, you're trying to taste the nectar. That's the problem. You're trying to taste the nectar. Why don't you chant in such a way that you can give nectar to Krishna? That Krishna can taste nectar by hearing the way you're chanting around. You see? Then you will taste nectar, unlimited nectar. To whatever you can actually only be truly happy, to whatever extent you are giving pleasure to Krishna. Any other happiness is maya sukaya. You can only be truly happy to whatever extent you're giving happiness to Krishna. To that extent, you taste genuine spiritual bliss. So therefore, pure devotional service is really where it's at if you want to get the nectar. You're not going to get the full nectar until you come to pure devotional service. As confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, ahaitakiya pratiyata yayatma supersedati. Your devotional service must be without any material motives and it must be 24/7, uninterrupted, in order to get full satisfaction. Bhagavatam directly states that. You will not get satisfied unless you do 24/7 unmotivated devotional service, pure bhakti. Until then, you're not going to be fully satisfied. You see? So we have to, right now, we're not fully satisfied because we're not pure devotees. So we have to increase that. We might be 20% pure, 23%, you know, 8, maybe 60, depend on the person. Whatever degree of purity we have, as I explained last night, we have to inch our way forward. Well, I'm at 22%. Now let me go for 23%. And then at 23, let me go for 24%. Keep trying to improve the quality of your chanting, improve the quality of your relationships with Vaishnavas, improve your relationship with the deities, the feeling you have for the deities, in every aspect, your relationship with Srila Prabhupada, by studying his books and trying to follow his instructions, in every way try to always be improving all the different aspects of your Krishna consciousness. And in this way, you will be advancing step by step by step to 100% pure devotional service. So any other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, what happens if we perform a devotional service in a frustration mood?
What is that?
In a frustration mood, if we perform a devotional service.
Oh, if you perform devotional service in a frustration mood, it's not devotional service. It's to say, okay, Prabhu, you should serve out the prasadam for the feast. And so you're just thinking of your own eating. Well, I wonder if it's going to, I want to eat, but I just you serve it out like this. Here, take your prasadam. Not that, oh, my dear Vaishnava. I remember, I never forgot this. This is one of those, it's permanently etched in my memory. I was a young brahmachari back in about 1982, I think it was. I was visiting our temple in Juhu, ISKCON Juhu, big, wonderful temple that Prabhupada personally, you know, established. And the temple president at that time was one of our big, big sannyasis. Giriraj Maharaj. Actually, he was such a big sannyasi. Actually, when he was a brahmachari, Prabhupada said, Giriraj is Bombay, and Bombay is Giriraj. That's how big of a preacher he was. I mean, he was big time. But for Prabhupada to say that, you can understand how dedicated he was. His father was a multi-millionaire attorney who offered him $1 million if he would give up Krishna consciousness, and he said, no way. He refused. And his father later became favorable. His father and mother came and associated with Prabhupada. But anyway, that's a little bit besides the point, a little interesting nectar there on the side. But so I was sitting there in the prasadam room in the Bombay temple, Juhu, and in comes Giriraj Maharaj. I couldn't believe it. He walks over to me. In a very sweet voice, he says, is there anything else I can bring for you? I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. It was so much love. He was, is there any more prasadam you would like? Can I bring you something more? I just couldn't believe it. I was just some unknown brahmachari visiting from the Dallas temple. And he was treating me like I was his spiritual master or something. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. It was so much love in the way that he said, is there anything else I can bring for you? I couldn't believe it. This is really, I really knew I'd been blessed by Krishna. That Giriraj Maharaj so sweetly and wonderfully showed the mood of what it means to be Krishna conscious, to serve Vaishnavas. So anyway, this is what we have to do. Sometimes we do get frustrated, because we're thinking about our own comforts, but we keep forgetting that the real comfort, the only true comfort, is to enter that mood of pure devotional service. That's the real comfort zone. We may say, "Well, this is outside my comfort zone. I mean, I don't want to do this. I only do service within my comfort zone." And if somebody wants to do, if the temple president asks me to do service outside of my comfort zone, we get frustrated. You see, that's not within my comfort zone. But the real comfort zone, which is an unlimited comfort zone, like Prabhupada one time said, Tamal Krishna Goswami can face fire. You see, the real comfort zone is just to take up that mood of pure devotional service. My dear Lord Krishna, whatever you want to do with me, I'm just your puppet. You pull the strings and I will dance. As Prabhupada wrote in his arrival prayer when he came to the U.S. You see. I am your puppet. You pull the strings, you see. He says, I have been designated Bhakti Vedanta even though I have no Bhakti and I have no Vedanta. I have no devotion. I have no knowledge. But I have been somehow designated as Bhakti Vedanta. I am simply your insignificant servant. In this way, Prabhupada presented himself to Krishna in his arrival prayer and begged for his blessings that he could be successful in preaching Krishna consciousness movement. Actually, Prabhupada revealed something to us in Atlanta. It was very surprising. He told us, he said,
when I came to your country, he actually first he gave an example. He said his god brothers had gone to the UK on the order of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati to try to establish Krishna consciousness movement there. But at great expense, I mean, you can imagine supporting people in the UK with Indian rupees. They weren't generating income in the UK. They were sending money from India. You can imagine how expensive it was for Bhaktisiddhanta to support preachers in the UK with Indian rupees. But the Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati did that because he had that desire to establish Krishna consciousness movement in the Western world. It was a failure. All they could do was pose for some photographs of some lords and ladies, and after a while they came back to India and the whole thing was closed down. But while they were there, his godbrother met with Lord Jetland. Now Lord Jetland had Lord Zetland, but Prabhupada pronounced it Jetland. Lord Zetland was formerly the governor of Bengal during British rule, so he knew about Vedic culture. So in the UK, he was on the top rung. He was a lord. And he knew that in India, the top rung is Brahmana. So he was interested in getting double credentials, you know, being in the top of the heap, both in the in British culture and in Indian culture. He said, Swamiji, can you make me a Brahmin? So Prabhupada's godbrother said, yes, I can make you a Brahmin, provided that you follow these principles, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling. And Lord Zetland immediately replied, impossible. The case closed. So Prabhupada told us, when I came to your country, I was thinking, as soon as I tell them, you have to give up illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, they will immediately tell me, please go home. So Prabhupada was thinking, I was thinking it impossible, but I thought, let me try. And then when Prabhupada said that, I yelled out, Jai, and then everybody picked up on that. The whole room went Jai. I said it first, though, because I knew that because Prabhupada tried, that's how he became saved. If Prabhupada had not made that try, against what he thought was impossible odds to establish this movement, then we would all be nowhere, simply caught up in karma chakra. So Prabhupada said, but let me try, you see. So, in this way, we have to understand that we should make that endeavor, even if it seems impossible to become a pure devotee, even if it seems possible to spread this Krishna consciousness movement, we must make that endeavor, just as Prabhupada did, even though he thought he would be successful. Prabhupada actually thought he would be a failure. But that success and failure did not matter to him. He had the order of his spiritual master, and he must try to execute it to the best of his ability, even if he's a complete failure. Still, I have done my best to serve Guru Maharaj's order. That's it. You see? So he made that endeavor, and Krishna blessed him with unlimited success, unparalleled success in the history of Vaishnavism. And that success continues to expand more and more until one day ISKCON will be recognized as the leading educational institution on this planet. Nowadays, we're very happy, just like in our Radhadesh. Actually, I'm going there to give the same mini seminar in pure devotional service in March. I'll be doing a pure devotional seminar in Radhadesh. Same topic. I love this topic. But they have gotten accredited by some university in the UK that you can just study at Radhadesh, and it counts as university credit through this mundane university in the UK. And it's a nice thing. It's a nice victory for our movement. But the real success of our movement will be, and I told this to Yadananda Maharaj, and he was really happy with this. He's the headmaster there in the school. I explained to him that actually the real success of our movement will be when they have to come to ISKCON to be accredited as a bona fide university. Unless the university is accredited by ISKCON, it's considered low-class university. Only the ISKCON accredited universities will be recognized as top-notch, you know. So if we continue in this effort, that day will come when ISKCON will be recognized as the leading educational institution on this planet, and the only universities worth attending will be the ISKCON-certified universities. That day will come on this planet. If we continue to read Prabhupada's books, try to follow Prabhupada's books, and distribute Prabhupada's books. So any other questions? Maybe our time is up now. It's 2:05. Probably 2 o'clock is your normal cutoff. Huh? All right. So we've got a special extension. Your merciful temple president has given a special extension today. If anybody else would like to ask, yeah.
Maharaj, if you have say limited time, okay, and if we have two options to chant our 16 rounds or do other service, do other devotional service, which one should we choose?
That's an interesting question. I've already explained here. I think you missed that class, but I will briefly tell again because it's a wonderful example. What do you do when you have service to do and you have rounds to do? How do you prioritize it? How do you balance it out so you can do both nicely? So my godbrother, Ramnath Sukhaprabhu, he was the cook in our Atlanta temple, and it was a major, major chakra on the book distribution circuit in those days. There was a huge army of devotees going to the airport. There was devotees going out in vans all over the southern U.S. It was a very major preaching center with so many devotees there who had big appetites, young men who were out there working hard all day. And he was the cook. He had to cook for all these devotees, you see. And he had to cook the deity suites. And so, I mean, he was very busy the whole day. So when's he going to chant his rounds? He had to go to the kitchen right after Mangal Arati to work on the breakfast, you see. So he had a very brilliant idea. He was very dedicated to good sadhana. I really love this godbrother because his example was so wonderful. I just recently found out where he was and reconnected with him through the internet. I was very happy to reconnect with him after all these years. But anyway, his idea was to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, take his shower, chant 16 good quality rounds before Mangal Arati, and then after Mangal Arati he would, you know, go to the kitchen, and then when all the devotees headed down to the prasadam room to enjoy the big breakfast he had made, where was he? He was up, and now the brahmachari ashram is deserted because all the brahmacharis are down in the prasadam room. He'd be up there every day taking them. You could set your watch by his regulation. Well, Ramanath Sukha is now taking his nap. It must be this time. You could say he was very, very regulative. And he chanted good rounds. He cooked incredible prasadam, and then his milk sweets were second to none. They carried some of them to Mayapur for the festival to give to Prabhupada, his rasagulas. And Prabhupada so much appreciated his rasagulas. He said, I want more of these. So a telegram came. I was there in Atlanta helping him in the kitchen. And the telegram came from India. Prabhupada wants more rasagulas. So he made them and shipped, you know, packed them up very well, and they shipped them to India because he pleased Prabhupada so much that Prabhupada, by his nice sadhana, you see, by chanting very good rounds is his first priority in the day, and then doing first class service, he had given great pleasure to Srila Prabhupada, you see. So that if at all possible, you know, adjust your schedule so you can get your, even if you have to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you can always take a nap later if, unless you're an insomniac. And some of us are tamaguniacs, and we can take rest anytime. But anyway, if you can do that, you can always take, if you're able to take rest during the day and break your sleep up, that's one way to do it, is because the early morning hours are the best time to chant. And maybe, you know, maybe your own, It depends on your schedule. I'm just giving you some ideas. Another way to get your rounds prioritized is to not take prasadam until you finish your rounds every day. You have to skip breakfast. I mean, you're not going to die. I used that trick when I was when the Bhaktivedanta Tate Ministry first started sending out those cassettes every week. We had a standing order with the Bhaktivedanta Tate Ministry because the Prabhupada was right there in L.A. giving the morning walks, the lectures, the room conversations, all this nectar. Cassettes had just become invented. It was a new technology, cassette tapes. And they would take those lectures, they put them on cassette, and everybody got a subscription. You get your packet with all the new cassettes of the hot lectures that Prabhupada gave 3 days ago on the beach, or the morning walk on the beach, or the lecture in the temple room. Now, We have all this nectar, but you have service to do all day, Prabhu. You got to do this service, that service. Where are you going to sit down and listen to the tapes and study and take notes like I wanted to do? So I said, well, I don't need prasada. I just skip lunch every day. And during lunch, I would go to the Brahmacharya Ashram, turn on my cassette player, get out my notebook. I have a whole stack of notebooks of all the notes I took on those lecture tapes, all those tapes that Prabhupada, you know, of Prabhupada's preaching. So if you will prioritize Krishna hearing and chanting over eating, that can help a lot. Because you're not going to die of starvation. If you can do a little tapa, and put the rounds is more important, because actually when you eat, what are you feeding? You're feeding the body. When you chant, what are you feeding? You're feeding the soul. So which is more important? Which is sat and which is asat? Obviously, the body is asat, it's temporary. The soul is eternal, sat. So of the two feeding programs, what's better, feeding your soul or feeding your body? So in this way, if we will prioritize feeding the soul over feeding the body, Krishna will give full facility. Actually, Krishna is your best friend. He wants you to be able to chant his name with purity. And if you make an endeavor, even in a seemingly impossible situation, he will give you great facility. I also had experience of this. There I was, a brahmachari for 14 years, you know, completely addicted to going to Mangalarti every day, morning program, you know, being strict Krishna consciousness for 14 years of wonderful brahmachari life. And then by Krishna's arrangement, I was in the grihastha ashram. So now I had to go out and work, get a job, you know, like all the other grihasthas, to support grihastha ashram. But they said, okay, we don't have any position except this one. You work from 11 till p.m. until 8 a.m. Oh, my God. What happened to Mangalarti, my morning program? Oh, Krishna. But I had that strong desire, you know, to go to Mangalarti every day. But then when I actually got I sat down with my new supervisor, and he said, you know, nobody likes to work this night shift. So if you want to take an extra long lunch break, there's no problem. So it was great. I would take my lunch break at 4 a.m. You see, give me enough time to drive to the apartment to pick up my wife, take her, go to the temple, attend Mangalarti, and then drive straight back to work. It was perfect. I got to go to Mangalarti every day. And then I would get off work just in time to catch the tail end of Bhagavatam class. So because I had that desire, you see, that I don't want to miss Mangalarti, you see. There's actually a boon given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that anybody who observes this Mangalarti during the Brahma Muhurta, the Garbhastakam prayer, you see, they will achieve, upon leaving their body, they will achieve the direct service of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Therefore, I instruct all of my disciples that either come to the temple or you should have a little arti and sing their Garbhastakam prayers at home every day during the Brahma Muhurta. You can do it in 10 minutes if you're on a tight schedule. 10 minutes you can sing Garbhastakam, do a dupe arti, you see. So this is the point is, even if there's an apparent difficulty of service or job or this or that that's getting in the way of your sadhana, your basic requirement, chanting your rounds, Krishna will help you. Just have that sincere desire to be able to chant purely the names of Krishna, and Krishna will give you all facility. He's in control of everything. He's the absolute supreme controller, and he can arrange anything and everything to help you to come to him as quickly as possible. Is that clear? All right. Anything else? Yes. Yes. Yeah, how Hare could match with Balaram. Well, actually, Balaram also had his gopis. But, yes, Prabhupada does say that Rama can refer to Balaram, Ramachandra, or Parasaram. He does say them. So the question would be, is there a particular female that would be the energy of Balaram and Parasaram? Of course, there's Ramachandra, we know. And I don't know the answer to that question. I know that Balaram does have his own gopis. He has his own rasa dance, and he has his own gopis. There could be a favorite gopi of Lord Balaram also. It would seem logical that if he has a bunch of gopis that dance rasa dance with him, he probably has one that's very special. It's logical that he would also have a favorite gopi. Since Krishna had a favorite gopi.
Isn't Balaram Krishna himself?
Yes. He is Krishna himself, playing the part of his own brother just for some transcendental rasa. He's actually Krishna himself. But to increase his own enjoyment, he expands himself as his own brother. Of course, it's inconceivable for us. I mean, how someone could do that? It's inconceivable. You know, to increase my enjoyment, I'll expand myself as my own brother, and we'll have agreements and disagreements, and it's inconceivable. But you have to understand, Krishna has achintya shakti. He has inconceivable power to do anything and everything. There's no limit on Krishna. He can do anything within our conception, beyond our conception. He's absolutely all-powerful. So he can do anything. He's not under the rules and regulations of our conception of reality. Anything else? So everybody satisfied now, fired up, ready to cultivate pure bhakti? You ready? Okay, question.
It is not a question. I am reminded of four Mahavakyas. I would like to repeat it.
What is the Mahavajya? What is it? What does that mean?
Maha means great.
Great, and the second word?
Vakya means
Vakya.
Sentence. Our words.
Four great sentences.
Sentence.
Sentence?
Sentence.
Sentence.
Huh?
Sentence.
Sentence?
Yeah.
Okay.
Poor words you can say.
Okay.
You can say.
All right.
And I just want to, it just crossed my mind, and for everybody I would like to repeat it, and I will leave it to one and all, to themselves, to merit the way they want, because time constraint is there. I would not, it would not be possible for me to explain as such. The vakyas are prajnanam brahma, that is consciousness in Brahma. Second, tatvam asi, tatvam asi. Thou art thou. Tat vam asi. Thou art thou. Ayatmanam Brahma. Ayatmanam Brahma. Self is Brahma. And then Aham Brahma.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I am Brahma.
Yes, thank you very much.
That was
four.
Yes.
You asked for four, now you're asking for another one?
No, I am not asking for another one. I am just...
You said four, now you exhausted. Now I have some that I want to give.
Excuse me?
You want one more? No. All right, give one more then. Go ahead.
No, this is not... These are the four that I finished.
You
finished? I just want to...
You want to add one extra one? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Extra.
Go ahead, come on.
See, Krishna has got so many names and so many forms.
Ah.
And each name means same. In the sense, pure love, pure truth, pure consciousness, pure reasoning.
Yes, yes.
All these things, they come to the same point. And there is a name for Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, which is as Gudakesha. Buddha Kesha.
Yes.
Buddha means.
Then? No, okay. Okay, so now it's my turn.
Buddha means.
Now it's my turn.
Dark.
Okay.
And Kesha.
All right, now it's my turn.
Yes.
Yeah, now it's my turn. The we sometimes say that the living entity is Brahman, and that is a fact. But we have to understand what is the meaning, and we have to understand according to the context, you see. Because actually everything is Brahman, that is a fact. Because, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sravasya Prabhava Matak Sarvam Pravartate. I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. So actually, everything we see is Krishna's expanded energy. So in that sense, everything is Krishna, everything is Brahman. We agree with this understanding. But there is two types of Brahmans here. There is the emanator Brahman, and there is the emanated Brahman. It's like the sun and the sunshine are one. But there is the sun globe which emanates the shine, and there is the shine which is emanated from the sun. So this distinction, the great acharyas have explained to us that even though we understand that everything is Brahman, it is also very important to understand the difference between the emanator Brahman and the emanated Brahman. It is compared to the ocean. Just like we can bring one sample, I can bring in my hand one. I can take some water from the Pacific Ocean, and I can say, "My dear sir, here I have Pacific Ocean." And you will agree because it is a sample, it's a specimen. It is Pacific Ocean. But if I tell you, "My dear sir, here is the Pacific Ocean," which means the entire Pacific Ocean, you'll say you're a madman. You see. On the one hand, you will agree, this is Pacific Ocean. But if I say it is the Pacific Ocean, you'll go, "You're crazy. I can't float a ship in the Pacific Ocean." So there is the complete whole Brahman, and there's the part and parcel Brahman. So Krishna, he is complete whole Brahman, and we are part and parcel Brahman. So we, as the part and parcel, are meant to serve Krishna. And this is why Lord Chaitanya has explained, as quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jivera Svarupa Hoy Krishnera Nityadas. The constitutional position of the living being is that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. So we should never think, because I am Brahman, therefore I am Krishna. We are the sample of Krishna, but we are not the complete whole Krishna. So as the part of Krishna, we are meant to serve the complete whole. So we have to be careful. Many swamis and yogis will say, "I am God, you're God, and we're all God." But this philosophy, if taken exclusive of the understanding the difference between the part and parcel of God and the complete whole of God, will kill the facility for serving that Supreme Person. And that means there will be no, without service there can be no love, and without love there can be no real happiness. If I simply want to merge that I am Brahman, Krishna is Brahman, now let me merge into Brahman, then where is the love? Love means two, Krishna and you. So we have, the Vaishnava would rather keep his individuality and become one in harmony with Brahman. I'll give you an example. It's like a guitar. You see, there are six strings on that guitar. Now, if those strings are nicely tuned with each other, then they create a very beautiful harmony. When you play a chord, it's very, very pleasing to the ear. But if those strings are out of tune, it sounds horrible. Oh my God, stop playing that thing, will you? So the true meaning of merging with Brahman, becoming one with Brahman, is not to become Brahman, but to become in perfect harmony with Brahman. Do you understand? Not that you become Brahman himself, but you become in a state of perfect harmony. That is true oneness with Brahman. That is the highest level of oneness. Because then you have a more beautiful, more complete, total experience. If that symphony orchestra is all merged down into one instrument, it's not nearly as beautiful and as wonderful as if you have all these different instruments, the violins, the violas, the cellos, the bass, the timpani drums, the saxophone, the oboe. You see all the variety of instruments. It becomes much more beautiful. So in the spiritual existence, although everyone is Brahman, they keep that individuality so that it becomes more beautiful, more wonderful, and more glorious. So I just wanted to, that was my comment. So I thank you all very much for coming today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.